Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com, and I are going to break down the NCAA tournament draw. Florida will play the winner of the Colorado-Boise State playing game. We'll get into that, get into those two teams. We'll get into Florida's sub-bracket with Marquette, Western Kentucky, Colorado-Boise State, and the Gators, all vying for one spot in the Sweet 16. We will also talk a little bit about the SEC championship game, Florida loses to Auburn. Thoughts and prayers, good vibes out to Micah Hanlockton as he suffers a heartbreaking injury. We are really, heartbroken by that. And just wish him the best as he's in surgery tonight as we record on Selection Sunday. Wish his family the best. Wonderful, engaging young man. And we hope that he recovers quickly and well. Enjoy the show and remember to give us ratings on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen. We really appreciate that stuff. And if you can, subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/FloridaBBHour. I hate how awkward that is because of the Hanlockton injury, but I wanted to get special wishes out to Micah at the top of the show where I usually put all this stuff. So just really appreciate you guys. And Micah, man, get well soon. Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. It is Selection Sunday. The Gators have received their seed. They're invited. That's good. 7 seed to the NCAA tournament. We do not know their opponent yet, as their opponent is one of two teams playing in Dayton, either Boise State out of the Mountain West or Colorado out of the three-bid Pac-12. Two very different basketball teams, Colorado and Boise State. But obviously, let's start with the SEC championship. Florida hammered, really dominated for the most part by Auburn. They cut it to one in the second half, and then a few different things happened where Auburn was able to pull away. Namely, Florida missed a bunny at the rim. Zion Pullen missed a couple free throws that could have given Florida a lead. And then Thomas Houck missed a wide open three. They had a couple turnovers, led to transition dunks. And then I think after Auburn stretched out back to eight, Florida's legs were just done. And they had worked so hard to get it back to one that they were finished, Eric. Obviously, the biggest news of the day, though, of course, is the gruesome and horrific injury to Micah Hanlockton, who I guess is in surgery right now in Nashville for a compound ankle fracture. Just a really, really unfortunate situation. And just hope that the surgery goes well and he recovers okay.
Yeah, I mean, your heart just breaks for him for so many reasons. Obviously, just incredibly gruesome for him. I just feel sick at his family having to see that. I think it was his dad maybe or like his family coming down. That image just breaks your heart. And again, I don't want to read into it, too much necessarily, but you even wonder what this does for his kind of long-term career. I'm not, probably shouldn't do any speculating on anything, but you'd have to imagine that this puts next year into some serious jeopardy. And then from there, coming back is pretty difficult. The way that college basketball is now, it's like these are prime earning years. And that's something that working for a professional team this year. And again, I'm not like just miss me for a sec for not, comparing college basketball at the high major level to professional basketball for a second. But like that was one thing where like we had a guy to get an ankle injury, not this gruesome, but that ended his career, ended his season. And at the professional level where these guys are trying to, there's only a certain number of years where you can use your body to earn this money and use basketball as a vehicle to get paid. And there was, you know, there's real world implications to, you know, this guy on our team that had his season ended. And for Micah Hanmockton as well, this is going to hurt his, at least, you know, could hurt his short-term earnings. So that hurts. A big reason why he came to Florida was because he wanted to compete in an NCAA tournament and was just days away from doing so. That just breaks your heart. And it just for things to end that way, it just couldn't be worse. And I guess in the moment, I was thankful that the SEC tournament was in Nashville. Heading off to Vanderbilt to get dealt with there seems like a pretty good outcome relative to, you know, some other places in the country you could have been stuck. So it was good that he was able to get the medical attention he needed right away, both from Florida staff as well as getting off to Vanderbilt quickly is pretty big. So and then, you know, it feels so clunky and awkward to bring it back to talking about the game, but it was one of those things where I think you wondered, like winning four games in 4 days is so difficult. And I think we just saw that again with Florida, just how difficult it is to compete at a high level for that many days in a row. NC State won 5 in 5 days to win the ACC, which is just crazy. And maybe says something about the ACC, in my opinion. But hey, full credit to NC State. But it did seem like Florida's legs just weren't there. Auburn both like had the jump as well as was able to kind of keep their intensity for 40 minutes where the Gators just couldn't. And then it's impossible not to say what did seeing someone's leg snap and a teammate's leg snap in front of you and be reduced to tears and then suddenly have to go back to there's no way to quantify that, but it sure as hell didn't help. You know, like I'm not saying it's the reason Florida lost, but it certainly wasn't a boost. I don't believe so. I think that Florida, I don't want to say it was like set up to lose this game, you know, before. Like, yeah, Auburn was favored. And again, like, hey, this is why you play really hard in the regular season to try to get that double bye. And this totally. Is why that double bye is important because, man, when it gets to the difference between your third game in 3 days and your fourth game in 4 days is a major one. So I do think that was the difference. And I think this was just a reminder of not that like the Gators could have done anything different. They had a great regular season relative to their talent and all that. So it's not like, well, you really wish the Gators took the regular season more seriously. Like that's not the case. But I will say full credit to Auburn for what they did in the regular season to put themselves in a position where they could win this game. And I thought Auburn played outstanding basketball. I thought they were locked in defensively. They were calling sets every time down the floor and running them really crisply. I thought that was the best I've seen Auburn play all year long. So you put in Florida's tired legs, an emotional moment, and Auburn just playing outstanding basketball. Like, yeah, there was that's at least the one thing I think is from a Florida standpoint. It's like it wasn't like, man, this team just got a couple bounces, or man, they just got super hot from three. Like Auburn played really, really well on both sides, and you know, I don't think for there's sure. any shame in the way that the Florida lost.
No, not at all. I mean, I thought. And to your point on NC State, so another thing I thought about that, and then I was thinking, you know, both the historic like big runs, Eric, like Kimba Walker running through the Garden with 5 wins in 5 nights, NC State. So NC State had the late game every night, but they played every night. Like, and that's another thing. Like Florida didn't have 4 late night games. Like they didn't have the full 24 hours of rest. Like Florida quite literally played on less rest. From Friday night to Saturday in the semifinal. And then they played a brutally physical game against, you know, Texas A&M. And to have to play a brutally physical game against Texas A&M and then have less rest to play Auburn the next day. You know, I guess they ended up having a little more rest for the final than they had for the semi, but still not much. And it wasn't the full day that NC State got between all of their games. So I think that does matter. And then the styles matter. You know, Virginia certainly typically is a physical team. But again, not as physical this year as we've seen in years past, and certainly not at the level of physicality that Texas A&M or Auburn play at. So I think just asking Florida to grind back into that, they throw in the emotional piece, and then throw in a team that that looked like a team that could be top five in KenPom for the first time that I've seen them look like that. You know, maybe for minutes, maybe for a handful of minutes against Tennessee, they looked this good. But, you know, they lost that game. They weren't able to withstand a big run by Tennessee at the end. And then here, Florida had their chance. But again, it kind of fell apart there at 45-44 and just a huge, I think Auburn went on a 17-4 run there, got it back out to 14. And then Florida had really nothing left in the tank after that. And once you saw like Walter Clayton and Zion Pullen, like mid range and long and open threes hit the short iron, you knew that that was going to be all she wrote. Once you start short rimming shots, it's usually a bad sign if you're playing from behind. So yeah, hey, heck of a run. I tweeted from the account. Some people saw, I thought Florida had a really good week period. Regardless of what the committee did, which I'm sure is why people are watching, but you know, I think, look, you won a couple of quad one games. You came from behind to win three consecutive games. You raised a huge deficit in the third game against a pretty darn good team that the committee obviously saw similarly to you, given where Texas A&M got seated. And you beat a really good Alabama team that, you know, at least computers are still in love with and the committee is clearly in love with. So, you know, I think a tremendous week for Florida basketball. They played for a championship. They lost. Obviously signs of good things in the future. And yeah, I mean, my heart really is hurting for Micah Hanlockton. And that was expressed to his family as quickly as I could, just that they're in my prayers and certainly that this was just absolutely gut wrenching and it will hurt Florida in the NCAA tournament, especially the way the draw breaks out. I'll get into why I think that in a little bit, but yeah, your thoughts on the draw. I think the 7 seed is a little unfair. I made that clear. I guess I shouldn't even say little. I think I think Florida is one of the teams that got a raw deal. I'm not saying it's horrifyingly bad. But I am saying that the committee's job is to seed the field properly. And I don't think that Florida is a 7 seed. I think that they had earned a 6 and certainly had shown that they were a 6 seed caliber team. And I think, let me make the case and then you can chime in. I mean, the case I think would be that Florida has 10 wins against quad 1 and 2, that Florida ends the year 14 and 1 against quads 3 and 4. The quad 3 loss is terrible at Vanderbilt, a terrible loss, but obviously only one of those bad losses. Florida's top 25 in pretty much every efficiency metric, I think, okay, which puts you on the edge of being a 6. And then they did fall down to the net, Eric. They fell to, I think, 29th. But I think Florida merits being a 6 seed.
Yeah, that was one thing I had to push back on that you tweeted from the – or I shouldn't say push back. I might need some clarification.
Sure.
You said that the Gators were a 6 seed by pretty much every metric or whatever you said, right, where the most popular ones are the net and KenPom, where they're decidedly not a 6 seed.
That's
so I'm
fair.
I'm just curious what you meant by that.
So yeah, let me explain what I mean. I really love, and I think it's the most fair way to do it. So I look at two things for that assessment. One is bracket matrix, which I think is more effective at the end of the year. And they were like universally a 6 seed. So there's a lot of bracketologists whose scores are going to be affected by Florida being misseeded. So that was factor one. I don't even think that's the most important. My most important one would be something I tweeted earlier in the day, which is the Bart Torvik similar resume tournament profile number. And I think that's an extremely useful tool because it breaks down quad 1A, quad 1, and punches it all into an algorithm and just shoots out a seed. And entering the day, Florida had their similar tourney profile was a 5. By the end of the day, they were 24th in Torvik, which obviously is a 6 seed via Torvik. That would be the last 6 seed, which is where I think Florida should have probably been seeded as the last 6 seed over either Texas Tech or Clemson. Right now, my Torvik isn't loading, but I think Florida was a 6 on similar tourney profile.
I think everyone else is on Torvik too right now, refreshing it, and that's why.
Yeah, no, that must be it.
Everyone's tweeting Torvik takes and all that stuff.
There's so many people writing tournament columns right now or researching for gambling that they're, that they've loaded down. But if you look at the thing that I sent earlier, you'll see that almost universally it was a 5 or a 6. Interestingly, the outlier was 2014 UConn, who had a very similar resume to Florida and ended up with the 7 seed and won the national championship. I just think historically Florida's resume is at least a 6. And I think this year, where many people have been talking about how it was a very strong bubble, if not, even though there's probably only 3 great teams in college basketball, you have a very strong bubble. So Florida was not on the bubble, and they're not one of the 3 really great teams. They're somewhere in that big hodgepodge. And to me, like, if you're going to make an argument for the committee, you have to say it had to be really hard to see the middle of the field here.
Yeah, the committee is, as we speak, really tripping over themselves, trying to answer a lot of questions. It's really bad. Like, by the, and honestly, I sent this to some people. Like, honestly, like the 2 seconds in the show when Florida Atlantic was an 8 seed, I'm like, okay, we are off the rails. Like, and they were not the only one even in that region, but you could tell from 30 seconds into the show that this was not going to be. I not only do I disagree with like the whole, a lot of bracketing, but like universally, there are just so many inconsistencies. You talked about people that are going to have their bracket accuracy affected. Like, most of the ones that were, it was like 9 of the 10 top bracketologists from last year had Florida Atlantic as a 10. So they were not 1 but 2 seeds off on Florida Atlantic. And like, I don't know if there was like very few brackets had them as an 8. So right from the, and I'm not just, that's just one example of many. And I just use it because it was literally the first one that jumped out when the show started. But I think it was crazy. I think there's inconsistencies everywhere. The Mountain West all over the place is disastrous. And as the committee is starting to answer questions about it as you speak, they're really tripping over themselves with logical inconsistencies.
So I found it, Eric, just so I'm going to share my screen. And this will be hard when people listen to this. I'm going to do it now just for those watching. So here, hold on. Okay. Share screen.
Well, just as you get that going, and then you can explain it. But I will say I had a slight, like, that was just my one question. I will say, when you tweeted the thing about the metrics, and I knew that Florida was not a top 60 in terms of the net and
CompCom.
That was my first. And again, I think that, like, and we can talk about larger questions, and this is more of an off-season thing. But like, again, I was someone who said Florida's non-conference schedule is okay. I didn't think it was terrible, but I was not in the train of like, wow, what a schedule. This is incredible. They're such wizards on Florida's, staff to schedule this. And when you get underseeded relative to what you think it is, it probably means your schedule was not as good as you thought it was. So I will. We can get into specifics in the off season. I just want to circle back to people that are listening, that have been listening since the fall.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of people that were like, oh, well, what do you mean? And like, thought the Florida schedule was so, well, like, they didn't get enough done away from home. And that's something that it does seem like the committee really weighed this year. You can argue whether or not that's good. And then, larger thing, I we said all year long, like, Florida hovered around the 30s in, or like the 30 mark in the net and KenPom. And well, they got seeded like they were 20th to 30th in the net / KenPom. So those are the things. But at the same time, just before you explain this, I just do not see a single argument as to why Clemson should be higher than Florida. I am not sure there is a single one. And and that is just one of the, so there is certainly an argument that Florida should be higher, as much as I do think there's reasonable arguments to why they were seated correctly. You can also just say like, well, there's Clemson at 6, and like, there's no rebuttal to that. But Neil, as you pull this up, you can explain what you're talking about.
No, Sam, I was given permission by Rocco Miller, who we had on a Patreon episode, to share that. Like, he did not think that there was an argument that justified Clemson getting a higher seed than Florida. Just based on some of the atrocious losses that Clemson took. And, you know, yeah, Clemson, they beat North Carolina and Chapel Hill, and they beat Alabama at Alabama. But, like, Florida had signature quad 1A wins, too. In fact, more quad 1A wins than Clemson did. So here's the Torvik thing. I found it. It actually loaded. It took forever. And you can see that the average seed for someone with Florida's resume is 5.6. So that's, you know, round up, that's a 6 seed. You can also see kind of where those teams went. Looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lost in the round of 32. 1, 2 went to the Sweet 16. Only one lost in the first round. That was Oklahoma State in 2013. And then there they are. Everybody, every Florida Gators fan, worst nightmare, the 2014 Connecticut Huskies, national champions as a 7 seed. Thanks to the absolute heater that their star point guard went on, despite every effort of Kevin Ollie to keep that from happening. No, that's mean. Although true. sorry. Yeah, so there you go. Just kind of interesting as you look at it. You know, Florida's net number 28 there. ELO number 24. Florida's strength of record ended up being 16th, I think. It's pretty darn good. I think when you look at all these metrics, the other message, and I'm going to stop the sharing now, I think the other message, Eric, is conference tournaments don't matter that much. Like, the committee just didn't care that Florida beat Texas A&M yesterday. They didn't, like, and avenged a 1-point loss on the road. The committee did not care that Florida blasted Alabama on Friday night. Or I guess one other way to think about that is that if they did in fact care, then Florida was maybe an 8 or a 9 heading into the conference tournament. And the only bump they got was back onto the 7 line. And then I think the final takeaway is obviously that loss to Vanderbilt was just devastating for Florida.
Yeah, that just logic has to suggest that the Gators came in as an 8 seed, were probably unmoved by a performance against Georgia that was not very good. They saw a slight dip in the metrics from that. Then, you know, jump up to the 7 seed after a win against Alabama and stay neutral after a win over Texas A&M and stay neutral after a loss to Auburn. Like we talked about, the committee coming out and saying that they had 35 of 36 at-large teams decided Saturday morning. Like, come on now. Like, it's just that they've just opened themselves up to so much scrutiny that way. It's interesting with the way Auburn won and the way that they're where they're seated. It's a little hard to say whether or not they got the boost from beating Florida, but I think that they're seated, I guess, appropriately. Again, they're so hard to see because their resumes doesn't have a lot of meat on it, but they're just dominant in the metrics, which made Alabama and Auburn so difficult. But I think I'm okay with where they were, and I got plenty of right in the bracket. But
I'm fine. Yeah.
To suggest that that the Gators, I don't know. I'm not quite there to say that the whole tournament didn't matter. But from the moment when they said that they had 35 of 36 at-large teams decided before games started on Saturday, it's hard to imagine anything after that mattering greatly. So, Texas A&M, you know, maybe didn't give the Gators a huge boost. But again, it's also a lot easier to jump from 8 to 7 than it is from 7 to 6 and so on and so forth. It's not, you know, it gets increasingly more difficult. So, I'm sure there's going to be more questions than ever towards the committee. There's going to be more push than ever to have a like one metric, whether it be probably not the net, but something like strength of record to select and see the whole tournament. There's going to be more momentum for that than ever. So will the robot ump equivalent of selection happen? Like, I don't know. It's seemed like it's gained momentum every year, and this year it's going to have more momentum than ever. So, pretty difficult, but at the same time, like, realistically, is the difference between a 6 and a 7 going to drastically change Florida's outcome. Like, and again, I saw like some people, like again, Florida fans sharing brackets that had the Gators as a 5 seed. I did think that was outrageous, yeah. But they're out there. So I really do think the difference was, I don't think anyone had them as an 8. So 6 or 7, think most people can decide on that. Does the difference between a 6 and 7 really change Florida's outlook? I don't think so particularly. It is actually kind of funny. Like, and I'll be honest, like we talked so much about what we were going to do from a standpoint of the show, what we were going to do for Patreon, content. Yeah. And I was like thinking that we would, record this show and then we would record a Patreon show. And then I would do a little film for Patreon on who the Gators are going to play. And, I didn't even really think about the opportunity of Florida playing, a play-in, which again is just like, that shows you how many bid thieves there were, where we've got play-ins on the 10 seed, which I'm not sure has happened before. I'm sure it probably has.
Maybe once.
But we've got 2 play-in games of 10s because Colorado State and a Virginia team that I don't think anyone wanted anywhere near the tournament.
They shouldn't have been in the field. That one.
And Colorado State, who I think got underseeded, is playing in the other 10. So the Gators actually, you know, do have these plans. So I'm still going to do something for Patreon, though. Let me tell you, it'll be just a little bit more of a, it won't be video as much, but I'll talk about both teams and go through some advanced numbers. But so I still have, there will be Patreon. And Neil, I don't know if you're going to do anything Patreon tonight, but and then look for after Wednesday, maybe something. But to be honest, I didn't really think about the plan. And now it's going to be kind of interesting. Like, I mean, again, for Florida fans who are just like, whether you're a serious fan or a casual fan, you kind of have another game to really care about. Like, and again, I think that if you're listening to the show, there's a chance that people did not really have much interest in the play-in games historically. Whereas this, there's going to be a whole lot of people locked into a Boise State Colorado game. So that'll be interesting and really changes the this week from what it's been for Florida fans over the last little while.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's talk about Boise State. Since we might as well get into the Florida, who Florida's playing. I think we're going to have some Patreons about with some film study and then some Patreons kind of breaking down the regions. Go to Patreon/Florida BB Hour and subscribe if you want some good bracket advice or terrible bracket advice. No promises. Do not sue us or take any of this for a reason to gamble or anything like that. But we'll give you the best thoughts we have. That's all I can promise. And I know Eric will do his best too. So Boise State, I think the thing with them is that they really, when I've seen them, they can really struggle to score against good teams. They will absolutely guard you. And so that's kind of the first thing. And some of the numbers, like if you look at some of their efficiency numbers against really quality opponents, it really bears out what I'm saying about their struggles to score. Their offense against top 50 opponents is 92nd, according to Torvik, whereas like they're actually around 50th overall. So obviously against weaker opponents, they do a pretty good job of scoring, but not as much. Against quality teams, they really, really guard the arc well. And that is a schematic thing that they do by design. They like to absolutely get up you, chase you off the arc and force you to get in to the paint. And teams are shooting 30% from deep off them as a result of that. I'm not sure. I don't have it in front of me what the volume was, and nor did I write that down. They also don't give up a lot of offensive rebounds. So they're a really good rebounding team that can guard you and guard the three-point line. I think certainly the defensive aspect of Boise State to me is the more interesting thing should they be the team that Florida plays. The other thing I would point out is that I think another big reason that they're really good defensively is that they have size in kind of a switchable athletic wing kind of way. And you think about some of the teams that have actually guarded Florida pretty well, and they're teams that can just roll out 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", type of size and length, and Boise State certainly could do that to the Gators. Doesn't mean that the Gators won't be able to score. Again, that defense has not been as good against elite offenses, with the exception of a really nice win over St. Mary's in the non-conference. That defense did not travel so well against great opponents, but those are my preliminary thoughts on Boise State. I'll kick it over to Eric for his.
There is like some, and I mean, this is like, take this loosely, but there's some parallels to Auburn, in the sense that like they are all about the front court offensively. Tyson Dagenhart, like a 6'8", 230 pound forward who can like both like pound it inside and score on the rim. He can also stretch it out a little bit. And then Omar Stanley, it's like another like 6'8", 240. Like, so those two guys kind of patrol the paint. Stanley's a little bit more of a banger. Dagenhart's a little bit more of a face-up guy. But like, those are the two leading scorers, I think. And when you watch, like, everything just goes through those guys. And that's probably a little bit of, like, if you're looking at, like, what would be the matchup concern for the Gators, I think it would be that, like you said, pretty long and physical. So they defend pretty well. And then the fact that like we've seen the Gators struggle with like these physical below the rim kind of guys, and you know, Hanluckton is maybe someone who struggled with that a little bit more. He's not going to be in there, but still, like they will attack through the post. And I say they're a little bit Auburn-y just in the sense that like the defense, like you mentioned, Neil, except it's a little different because they're like size and length and physicality more than like speed on the perimeter. But like offensively, they're a team that just like everything is through the front court. So with that would be the weakness of their guards are not great. Not to say that they're bad, but they just don't have a lot of electricity. Like Max Rice, like a 6'5" shooter, like he's a really good player, but not like that like traditional kind of like ball handling setup guy. Like Cam Martin off the bench is a little bit more of like a traditional kind of, or like, sorry, he was a little bit more of that like traditional kind of ball mover type, but just, you know, hasn't been playing as much. So I think that's like, that's just a situation where you really like Florida's advantage in the backcourt. And then I think you see that Boise State is a little bit more of like a, you know, pack it in type team, protect the rim. And, you know, they'll dare Florida to shoot in a one game situation. You obviously fear going cold. And then I do think it's very notable that Boise State has been really dynamic on the offensive glass, really dynamic on the defensive glass, fifth in the country in defensive rebounding. And I think that's a little bit because of their physicality as well as the fact that they kind of rebound up and down the lineup with their length. And then, of course, I'll point out to people that, like, this is functionally a high major league that they did these numbers in. Like, we saw how many bids the Mountain West just got. Like, in a lot of, like, can certainly argue they're much better than the Pac-12 and argue that they're better than the ACC. Like, this is not like they were the physical team. And that's a very physical league. So it's not like these are legit numbers. I know we kind of contextualized some non-Power 6 numbers in the past, like, this year, this is a Power 6. So, those are real, you know, legit numbers. And, I think that, we saw the Gators just lose against Auburn in kind of a little bit of a grinded out game. It was a lot lower possession than the Gators are used to. Something we didn't talk about in this Florida game, which I think is just anomalous, but like 1-for-13 from the 3-point line, which is like, I mean, it's one thing to shoot 8% from three, but even the fact that Florida only shot 13 threes is bizarre. But again, I think that's more of like a one-off whatever, but it's like, we saw them have a cold shooting game. If they play Boise's going to control the glass. They're going to slow things down. They're going to play through their front court, pick up a lot of fouls on Florida, and they're going to dare Florida to shoot and really pack it in to try to stay in front of the guards. That would be a very, like, if you were to be honest with you, and we'll obviously get into Colorado, but like both of these, like whoever Florida plays, it's going to be a really fun matchup from like a basketball standpoint. Like, not fun in the, like, Boise State wouldn't be your prototypical fun team. They're more physical, gritty, play really connected, play really hard. Like, they're not like an up and down kind of team, but like they play outstanding basketball in a way that's very different than Florida. And, like these, like, it would make for a very interesting matchup. I think it'll be, if that's the case, it'll be a really interesting game.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. And I think, you know, I think it's one game where not having a guy who's a top three offensive rebounder in the country could hurt Florida quite a bit. I think Micah Hand locked in because, and we talked about it yesterday on the show that we did after the A&M win. It was just sort of like, well, you keep rolling Hand locked in out there because he's capable of getting, there's that game where he gets seven to 10 rebounds and like five of the six of them are offensive rebounds and it leads to points. And so now obviously Florida doesn't have that weapon and Condon and Hawk are good rebounders. Hawk is, I think, a good rebounder on the offensive glass. But I think, you know, it's not the same as having your 7-footer who is only, he would have been the second best offensive rebounder in the field by the metrics behind Zach Edey. Cause Oklahoma did not get in. Yeah, I mean, I think that's one that hurts. So I would disagree only. Well, I guess all you said is that it would be fun. And I think I'm fine with fun on Colorado. And so what I'm going to do is disagree. I'm not going to disagree with Eric. I'm going to disagree with myself that conference tournaments don't matter because I think the committee contradicts themselves by putting Colorado in the first four and ignoring Oklahoma's body of work or St. John's body of work, for example. Probably Oklahoma's even more than St. John's, and rewarding a team for getting to the conference tournament final in, you know, a 3-bid league. And like, I appreciate the fact that, and look, Eric and I love analytics, right? We'll talk metrics all day. And Colorado was a top 20 team in Torvik over the last 6 weeks of the season. They're 14th in Torvik and top 10 in offensive efficiency in that span. But they also did it against pretty weak opposition, which, I mean, I guess is a testament to just how efficient they were because it's harder to move your metrics numbers when you aren't playing anybody good. But, you know, every time they played a great team that wasn't Washington State this year, they lost. There is not a win on the resume that sticks out as something that's super impressive beyond their wins over Washington State. They were 16-9 and 7-7 and falling off the like under consideration list that Lenardi puts out. And then they, you know, got hot down the stretch, quite obviously. And I think they won 8 of their last 9 to get into the field. Now, what I will say about them is I would agree totally with Eric that it would be fun. It'd be a fun game, I think, to watch, you know, certainly with KJ Simpson, who is just one of the best shooters in college basketball. Tristan Da Silva is a guy who can do a little bit of everything, European player, highly skilled. And then Cody Williams, I think, is like, if they played Florida, Cody Williams would be like the most coveted NBA prospect on the floor. So, and I don't think that's a hot take because I think he's their third best player, but I think NBA scouts see him as like, hey, that's a guy that's a pro. So I think it'd be a fun game. I also think it's a better matchup for Florida than Boise State. I think Florida would likely be able to score on Colorado pretty easily. And it would just come down to like whether or not the Gators could string together enough stops, which most good teams that Colorado have played, quite frankly, have done.
Yeah. Like, so Boise State is 39th in KenPom. If Colorado beat Boise State, that would be their highest KenPom win of the season. Like Neil said, they beat Washington State twice. They're 42nd. So also just to further contextualize Boise State a little bit more, like, so they would be third in the Pac-12 in KenPom. So that says something about how good the Mountain West is and also where the Pac-12 is as a conference. And I do think that Colorado underachieved. Like, I think that they had some like buzz before the year because they have Cody Williams, who's was a projected lottery pick. He's had some injuries. Then KJ Simpson is one of the best point guards in the country. I think he's like a KenPom All-American and has been for much of the season. So he's scoring like 20 points a game, hitting 45% of his threes. Like, he's outstanding. And then Tristan Da Silva, like you mentioned, was a player that used to have some NBA buzz when he kind of entered college. He's now a senior and obviously, you know, didn't turn out to be what they thought, but is still like a player with upside and length. And then they brought over Eddie Lampkin, who people might remember from playing with TCU. He's that like 300-pound, 6'11" center. So like they've got talent. I just thought they'd run through that league a little bit better. They had bad losses to Arizona State and California, which of course ended up hurting them. But yeah, it's one of those things that like I think Boise State just like played. And it's also worth noting that like when they, you know, they lost to Arizona State, Cody Williams didn't play. A couple of those games he didn't. They also won some games without him. So I'm not saying he's that important, but like I just look at Colorado and I see a lot of talent that is maybe doesn't fit super well. And then I look at Boise State, who's got a lot of really solid players, and they play together super well and play really intelligent basketball and have an identity. So it just is a matter of what scares you more. Is it the team that plays smart, plays composed, plays together, or is it the team that's got more talent? So I'll have to dig into it a little bit more. But yeah, it's certainly the more fun team is Colorado, because it's like, hey, there's an NBA guy. Hey, there's like a G League guy and KJ Simpson who scores 20 points a game. Oh, look at Eddie Lampkin. Everyone loves cheering for him because he's a big unit. Tristan Silva. I remember when he was like had NBA buzz. Like, so I think it's also worth noting, like just from a Florida standpoint, generally, just that Boise State plays a lot through their front court, who are better players, not super physically gifted. While Colorado doesn't play through their front court a lot, you know, they start 6'11" and like 300 pounds in Eddie Lampkin, and then 6'9", 220 Tristan Da Silva. So, and then they've got like a 7-footer, like thin as a rail kind of guy off the bench. I don't remember his name, that comes off the bench, but they don't have great depth in the front court. But those two guys are really impactful, just in terms of like, they've got that kind of, size. So they also defensively rebound very well, offensively rebound fairly well. So it's an interesting kind of matchup for the Gators, who have kind of feasted on smaller, less physical front courts and had some issues with more physical front courts. I think Boise State's the one that would like take advantage of them more from a scoring standpoint, because those guys could score one-on-one with Florida's front court. But Colorado's got like more length and more bulk to keep the Gators off the glass, maybe. But yeah, if you kind of thought with the way that this bracket was going to break, that there might be some of those teams on the 10 or 11 line that you thought the Gators were going to see, that the Gators would have a big physical advantage. Not really the case with either of these teams they'll face.
Yeah, second NCAA tournament appearance for the Buffs this decade under Tad Boyle. They made the second round in 2021. By the way, fun note that means nothing, but I'm sure it would probably end up in Denver Parler's notes for the Colorado game, if there is a Colorado game. Tyrese Samuel had 16 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 blocks against Colorado last year in the NIT. So just feasted on the Buffaloes. Although Colorado won the game by 1 point. So just, you know, I don't know. That seemed like a fun one. And when I saw that they played Seton Hall, I was eager to click on the box score and see exactly what went down and how Mr. Samuel played. And the answer was quite well. And yeah, that's an interesting one. Like, I think, you know, Eddie Lampkin is a guy that people love, but Florida has done pretty well offensively against bigs like that this season. So I think the Gators would probably be okay with that matchup. I would love Zion Poole and KJ Simpson. I mean, as Eric said, it would be fun. I think Florida would beat them just based on the way that they played against good teams this year. But I think Boise State, that kind of complete toughness, togetherness, could be one of those games where the Gators get a lead and all of a sudden, you know, things start to go poorly when the other team gets some stops and Florida can't do the same. AKA South Carolina, you know, kind of Boise. Like if Mountain West had a South Carolina, to me, it would be Boise State. And I've enjoyed some Mountain West basketball this year. Like, I feel like there's just a connectivity. They're a pain in the ass to play because they can switch everything, or they can not switch off the ball and just guard you man to man. They're just very versatile in the way they guard. They can, use ball pressure. They played a little bit of zone, not a lot. I don't know. I think it'd be a tougher matchup for Florida. So kind of looking at those two games and then like looking ahead at Florida's bracket, which, you know, you can see that Kentucky is the three, and then you see Marquette as the two. And so that's an interesting one to me. If Florida were to survive their first game, which I think it's going to be difficult if it's Boise State, maybe less difficult if it's Colorado, I will stick with that take. Doesn't mean that, I mean, I think both Florida could beat Boise State. It wouldn't surprise me. Florida could lose to Colorado. It would surprise me a little bit, but you know, anything can happen. Marquette is interesting. Like, so, and it's just because they seem to be, like, we talk about Florida being snake bit by injuries entering March Madness. And like, this is the second year in a row where Marquette's best player is going into the NCAA tournament. And like, it's a question as to how much he can produce. And I think that's a bigger deal than no Micah Hanlockton, because Marquette is so bad at rebounding that I honestly think Florida can beat them on the glass without Micah and get enough of their misses to make this super interesting, especially if Marquette's star is limited.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Tyler Cole, like, who's considered one of the best point guards in the country, is going to be a bigger loss than
stud
than Micah Hanlockton if he's out.
Yeah, I guess that sounded ridiculous, but you see,
I might have misheard you, but or you know, I know it wasn't your point, but
yeah, the point I'm making is Florida will still be able to win the rebounding battle. It might not be as extreme as it could have been, but you know, obviously the much bigger loss is Tyler Kolek, who is
one of the best players in the country. So here's where things are interesting. There, I personally think there is a lot of gamesmanship going on with teams that have injured players, because the NCAA selection committee does factor in if good players are missing. I know some people said that they thought that Florida got knocked to seed line because Micah Hanlockton is out. I don't think that, like, with all, I kind of think that's ridiculous. I would honestly bet a large sum of money that three quarters of the selection committee has no idea who Micah Hanlockton is. That with a gun to their head would not be able to tell you who Micah Hanlockton played for, or even that he's a basketball player. So, and that says, you know, that says something about the selection committee, and that's a different conversation, but they probably don't know who that is. They would know who Tyler Kolek is. And that's usually where they say it really matters, is with top four seeds. And that's historically when you see if they dock teams for missing players, it's almost always in the top four seeds. You've seen Kansas be missing some key players for the Big 12 tournament. And when you ask Bill Self, he says, oh, they'll be ready for the NCAA tournament. And when Tyler Kolek was out in the Big East tournament, Shaka Smart said, oh, well, you know, like if this was the NCAA tournament, he'd play. So we're just holding him out. There is not one chance in hell either of these coaches would admit if their guys weren't going to be there, because they might get docked on a C line. So I'm not saying that means that the two star players for Kansas or Tyler Kolek are going to be out, but I think there's I think there's a reasonable chance that they're going to be out. So something to consider. But like, if you want to talk like, hey, Florida, you know, maybe got seeded one seed lower. I mean, if Marquette doesn't have Tyler Kolek, that is suddenly like the two seed you want to be playing. And I think that's why a lot of people are going to have whoever advances from Florida, Boise State, or Colorado advancing to a Sweet 16. I think, again, as we talk about the kind of similarities, like we talked about how you've got like three teams that really rebound the ball, Florida, Boise State, Colorado. I mean, you look at Marquette and they're quite undersized up and down the lineup. Oso Iguodaro is listed at 6'11" and 235, but no one thinks that's true. And he's a fantastic player, really good player. I really like his NBA as well. Also hurt, like you said. But unknown if he'll be in there, but or I think it's, I haven't heard anything unless I'm missing something.
Yeah, crazy. They said he'll be okay, but I mean, it could be the exact same, because he did not come back in like a 1-point game in the Big East championship against UConn.
So I was just worried I missed something obvious. Thank you.
No, I just limped off with a knee injury where he needed help off the floor. And then they said, oh, he's fine. Even though he didn't come back in.
Yeah. So if Osa Iguodaro and Tyler Kolek are out, I mean, we could play with Torvik and find out what that team is. I'd have to imagine that's like a 50th or 60th best team in the country. And suddenly they would be on Western Kentucky upset watch, much less whoever wins out of Florida spot. So yeah, whether it's slightly gimped Osa Iguodaro or Tyler Kolek being slightly injured or not playing, like, this really does break fairly well for the Gators. So, or whoever advances. So, just pointing out what I was saying too, is like, yeah, they are kind of undersized. They struggled really badly with rebounding. They gave up a ton of offensive rebounds this year. They don't rebound the ball offensively. They play with a lot of speed and are aggressive. And that would be your concern from a Florida standpoint, is they might be able to turn over Walter Clayton a bunch. They might be able to double down on Florida's post players and do a really good job there of getting steals. I'm not ready to say that Florida being on the seven line is necessarily a gift, but there is certainly a chance that it is a gift, and they have one of the easier opportunities in a round of 32 game to go, just injury-wise. And even if Marquette is full strength, I think you start to look at the fact that Tyler Kolek is an outstanding passer, excellent vision, so good out of the pick and roll. But he's not like a guy who like can come off the pick and roll, keep Zion pulling on his hip and make a play. Like we've seen Florida's pick and roll defense really, really struggle the last couple of games. Kolek's excellent. I don't think he's exactly the type of guy to really pick apart the drop. I think he's someone who plays much better against aggressive pick and roll defensive coverages and passing out of there. And then, you know, Osa Iguodaro is going to be a problem for Florida's
for sure.
I think he's someone who can face up and score. He's not the kind of physical guy that we've talked about that normally gives Florida problems, but he can face up, and I think he'll have a foot speed advantage and be really good there. But still, kind of generally speaking, I think even I'm not saying if Marquette was full strength that it's like a clear advantage for the Gators, but I think it's a pretty good matchup for Florida. And then if you add in the injuries, if one or both of those guys are gone, like both of them play massive, like those two are as important to their team as any 1-2 punch in any of the other top two or three seeds. So I think as a Florida fan, you've got to be pretty, pretty happy with them as your 2 seed.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Ben Steele, speed writer for the Milwaukee Sentinel, and sent a DM that said, if Marquette plays Florida, Florida will win by 15 points. And I said, Florida doesn't beat anyone by 15 points, but I appreciate you, Ben. I asked him who the best player that wasn't Iguodaro or Kolek is, and he said, you know, Cam Jones can get hot. He said, but otherwise, like, it's kind of this, you know, Tyler Kolek creates and is just a visionary, and Iguodaro is really good. He's a massive matchup problem, you know, and he's right. I mean, Cam Jones averages 17 points a game. But there's a little bit of like not as good Walter Clayton to him. Honestly, like he doesn't really guard, and Walter doesn't guard all the time. I think they're going to work on that hopefully next year with Walt, getting him to be a little more committed to playing defense. Maybe he won't be. But Cam Jones doesn't even get the steals that Walter Clayton gets. He just kind of floats around and tries to not get in the way on defense. And then he can shoot and he can certainly score off the bounce a little bit. But those are the three guys. Like, I think it's a very favorable matchup, honestly, for Florida. And to be quite honest, it's a favorable matchup for Boise State too. So
yeah, I was just going to interrupt and say, and I'm kind of weird. I don't really fill out a bracket until like probably Tuesday night. I'm not in like a hurry. I like to kind of let the hey, we've all got a lot of emotion going on about seeding, about all that. This is not the time to make the most informed decisions I can. So I usually wait until like Tuesday or Wednesday night, and I'm going to take full advantage. And hey, if bracket contests don't make you like, you know, it's not like you have to have them in before the play-in games, which I think is kind of crazy, especially considering something I'm about to say. But I'm going to utilize that time. So I haven't decided yet, but I'm pretty sure whoever I have winning between the Gators and probably Boise State, but Boise State or Colorado, I think whoever wins that game is advancing past Western Carolina or Western Kentucky or Marquette. I think the Florida and Tennessee play-in game, I think the winner of that game is going to a Sweet 16. And, you know, then we'll talk about beyond. But I was also going to mention, too, something we should talk about before we should advance is the one thing that you have to be scared about if you're a Florida fan is I'm pretty sure in all but one year, a team that has won the play-in game has advanced past the round of 64. I should have fact-checked that, and maybe you have that off the top of your head because that seems like a Neil SID kind of stat. But I think it was like 2019 or something that it didn't happen. But other than that, every year that the play-in game has happened, one of those teams has advanced. So I know we're talking Marquette, but I realize I did want to ask you this question. What is your concern level for the Gators playing a team that has the play-in? We've seen it. Like, I don't know if you want to say it's an advantage, but like teams win the play-in game and then go on and beat a higher seed in the NCAA tournament. It happens essentially every year. So what is your fear or thoughts there?
Well, it's another reason I'm annoyed about the seed a little bit more than I would have been, to be honest. That is a stat. Now, there's obviously that would include Virginia and Colorado State. So one of those two teams would have to get, you know, they also have the opportunity is the point. Like, so Florida could beat Colorado or Boise. And as long as Virginia or Colorado State advanced, then that statistic would still be accurate. It would still be, it's not that both play-in teams win. So, you know, there is the chance. And last year that was the case, as it was Pitt who won a play-in game and advanced to the second round. The year before it was Notre Dame who won a play-in game and advanced to the second round. What's interesting is like, those were almost the opposite type of teams. Like Notre Dame didn't guard. They just got really hot for two games and won them both, and then they were done in the round of 32. Pitt, you know, they won that nasty grinded out game with Miss State and then played pretty well in the round of 64. Blake Hinson got hot, but mostly it was because they could really guard you last season. Jeff Cable's team left out of the field this year, probably because NC State stole a bid based on the way the committee kind of picked things. But yeah, I don't know. My point is like, I'm not loving it, and I'm not loving the other thing I'm not loving, which I think is a little underrated in this is so like the one possible example you have is that it's hard to like play that game, which is the late game always in the first four, the 10-10 game is always at 9:30, the 16 game is always earlier. So sometimes you'll get an advantage because you'll be in Dayton, Ohio, and then you'll have to fly to Spokane, or you'll have to go to Charlotte or Memphis or so, you know. Not this time. They're in Dayton, Ohio. They have to go to Indianapolis. Like, it's like a 45-minute flight. Like, that game ends, and they're in Indy asleep. Like, you know, so not even a big travel advantage for Florida there. And, you know, Florida has to scout both teams, obviously. The Gators get more time, but I don't think it's a huge advantage. So it's a pretty scary and dicey proposition for the Gators. We got a question. Will Kugel make the trip to Indy? Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he will. I don't know. We'll see what happens there. It seems pretty clear to me that he's not going to play this season if they didn't use him in a game where they had no fresh legs and they were exhausted and – he just sat on the bench. So I think that seems safe to say. I guess you never know. This staff continues to say that it values practice. I believe them. I wrote a column about it at SDS. Maybe Riley Kugel will practice great and they'll run him out there, but I don't think that's the case. We can talk very quickly about Western Kentucky because I at least looked up some stuff about them. If they beat Marquette, that would be a really fun game because they play like insanely fast. And I'd also say that like there are people in the industry who think that their head coach is like an absolute rising superstar in the industry. I think this is his like third consecutive NCAA tournament appearance
in three years as a head coach.
So
yeah, he's only coached 3 years, was at a dreadful job at Texas A&M Corpus Christi and made it both times.
Yeah. I have friends that, and they're friends of the podcast that, worked down at A&M Corpus Christi and knew Steve Lutz and said, like, you have no idea like how tough that job is. Like, it's a situation where it's one of those like old folklore tales where the coach does laundry. So like, you know, yeah, a third straight NCAA tournament appearance. Hey, good for them. Like, actually could see that game with Marquette being fascinating with them just because they play such a funky style and get up and down. And like, if Tyler Kolek is hurt, then they can turn you over because they thrive on chaos. Like, I don't know. That could be fun. Like, I'm not saying when I fill out my bracket, I'm going to advance Marquette. But like, of the 2-15 games, looking at my bracket right now, I am ignoring the fact that St. Peter's head coach has talked like more shit than you're supposed to talk. And I'm going to go ahead and say that Dalton Connect ain't losing to St. Peter's. And so,
I have not seen what you're talking about, but I'm intrigued. Can you summarize? Cause this is stuff I find hilarious.
Okay. So he went full Dan Hurley, like after they won their league tournament. And he was just like, it's a mistake that anyone let us win this conference because this was the year to get us. We're coming. And you can see this where you want. You see this 16, you see this 15, you see this 14. We're coming. And if you see this 14, you better be frightened this season. But we're coming. And it's just like, all right. Like, and so I think there will be people who are like, aha, Rick Barnes, St. Peter's coach, talked a lot of trash after they won the league tournament. Like, you know, is the Tennessee curse going to live on? Will this be the beginning of St. Peter's part due? It won't be. Tennessee is going to kill them. But Western Kentucky, I think, has a better chance than Long Beach State does of beating Arizona. I think that goes without saying. And then Iowa State, like, maybe it's just because I didn't watch them enough. I only watched them, like, early in the year when they were getting, like, waxed by Texas A&M and stuff. I did watch them beat the heck out of Houston the other night and was very confused at like, I guess teams are just different after 3 months. I don't know. They have some good players, and I think they'll win in the first round. I guess that's the only other 2-15 that I thought was kind of like, oh, maybe that'll be interesting for a little while, was Iowa State, South Dakota State. But I definitely think Marquette, Western Kentucky could at least be entertaining, which is all I asked for out of a 2-15, Eric.
Yeah, I think that when – and again, we saw obviously Kentucky and Purdue – lose, so like this isn't a hard and fast rule, but I think when you're looking for the difference between these 15-2 games or 16-1 games and like your and what are like possible and what's not, like sometimes you look at those 16 seeds and their center's 6'7" and 220 pounds and they're going, and you know, if they go up against a team that's massive and you're just like, wow, there's just such a size and athleticism difference that you're like, how do they lose? So, and I think that would be a little bit of the St. Peter's Tennessee matchup. You just look at like Tennessee size and you think like, hey, Dalton Connect could go 0-100 and still maybe they win just with their transition play and on the glass and defense. So that's not a perfect system because like we said, there's some, you know, Fairly Dickinson did win a game and all that against some pretty big front courts and all that. But I think that just the fact that Marquette does not play a physically dominant style, they do not overwhelm their opponents with size or athleticism. Suddenly, like, and like, believe me, like, let me tell you, firsthand experience, if you're a low major, mid-major team going against a high major team, whether it be scheduling in the non-conference or seeing in postseason, the only thing you're looking at is, are they going to dominate us physically, usually in the front court? Because a lot of these teams are really confident in their guard play. And they think, okay, well, you know, our 5'11" guard can hang with a 6'2" guard, you know, with speed and skill. But if you're 6'7", 220 at center going up against 6'11", 240, like you're just probably in trouble. And if you would say, I don't think that Steve Lutz is the kind of guy to, you know, go and talk like cut a WWE promo, but I bet if he said you could get any number two seed, he would have said Marquette, even stylistically, not even necessarily with the injuries, which adds a whole nother dimension to why Marquette might be the most sought after team. So I will not be bold enough to put this Western Carolina team. Western Carolina, I keep saying Western Carolina just because I saw that they just got a new coach. Shout out to Kraft, who is at Gardner Webb. Western Kentucky, I will not be bold enough to pick them to beat Marquette. But if that happened, whether it be because of injuries or not, it's one that you could like kind of have seen coming. Not super obviously, but you don't have to squint to see it happen. And if you're Florida and you get a win, you're just hoping that, yeah, this one is like play super fast. Cause like you said, Hilltoppers play insanely fast, wear things down. And that'll certainly be an interesting one. And Lutz has tournament experience. He won a play-in game, I think he's been in the play-in game both years. I think he lost one and won one. This will be his first time just nicely in the field without having to play a play-in. That's like, you know, you're watching a game on like True TV or whatever, and the top of your screen, you're just like out of your peripherals. You're like, oh man, it's 23-14 for the 15 seed. Like this has potential for that. Not saying I'm not going to be bold enough to make the upset call. If someone wanted to, or if someone catches wind that Igudaro and Kolek are out, yeah, that'll be a trendy pick.
Yeah, no, I think it will. It will. Man, this Bashir Mason stuff is just so great, though. Like, so people know he won like 3 NEC titles at Wagner, and like was considered like in low major basketball circles. It was kind of like, oh, interesting. Like, he went to St. Peter's. Why did he leave Wagner? He had clearly built a program there. He was like, our program is poetry. It's poetry in motion. It's a locomotive heading down the tracks. And wow. You know what you do when you hear the locomotive coming? You better run. All you can hear is silence then. Otherwise, you're in the way. Incredible. I don't know what happened. I mean, he just like – some of this stuff is just incredible. But, Bashir Mason, ladies and gentlemen.
Man, he caught the first 4 episodes of Shogun on Hulu and is now – suddenly writing beautiful prose. I kind of love it. I mean, it's kind of like when Tobin Anderson like said that he thought that they were like in the post game that he's like, hey, I think I like our chances against Purdue. And it's like, if they lose, like whatever, but if you win, you look like a genius. He's like taking this to like the next level where like, I don't think he's going to get clowned if they lose. Like maybe they will. Cause that's certainly another level than what Tobin Anderson said. but if they win, he's going to look, like people are going to be like, wow, look at this, like the confidence and swagger. And, but I did not know that. And now I am much more intrigued. So, I look forward to seeing how that game goes.
Yeah. And then he closed this whole rant with, you know, as my mentor, Danny Hurley says, you better get us now because we're here. I love March. So I see some comments, potential Florida-Kentucky rematch. Yeah, that would be fun. By the way, the NCAA is not supposed to do that. It's supposed to be the Elite Eight when a team can play a third time. So I guess the NCAA was just like, yeah, whatever.
I just assumed that it would be bumping up into other rules because there's like so many rules that like eventually like.
That so must have been.
I didn't actually look at it. And to be quite honest with you, we talked about the 2 seed being kind of favorable for Florida from a matchup standpoint. Yeah, at least in my opinion, if the Gators did have to go up against a 3 seed out of the 3 seeds, I would say give me Kentucky. Like, and I know that like I don't want any piece of Creighton if I'm Florida personally. I don't know what
over what Illinois. You think
on. Ooh, that's true. I might be on Illinois. I do not like how they've been. Playing recently. So maybe it was just mostly Creighton I was concerned with, but and Baylor, we, you know, of opponents Florida has played, I would say Baylor is playing worse basketball now than they were earlier in the season. But I don't know, like if I were to rank them, I'd probably say, yeah, I think I'd want Illinois first. You're probably right on that one. I'd want Illinois first, then probably Kentucky, then Baylor. And I think Creighton's in a league of their own in terms of best 3 seeds, in my opinion. I'm not complaining with this particular.
They can win the tournament
as much as, but with Kentucky, like, it's just one of those things too, that like when there is so much outrageous about the bracket, piling on because Florida and Kentucky can meet earlier. I'm all for it because, or I mean, at least I understand it because there's so much poor stuff about this bracket that, you point out the inconsistencies wherever they are and we'll see what happened. Actually just important, comment. I don't know if you need to put this on screen, but, someone pointed out Shaka Smart just said Tyler Kolek, which Kolek spelled out very phonetically, maybe not correctly, but I like that spelling, said he's planning on playing the first game. I am still going to take that as potential gamesmanship. There's just no upside in him saying if he wasn't going to. So I would just, and again, I know I've said it on the podcast all season long that everyone needs to not take coach speak at face value. We'll see on that one. Worth noting. So thank you for sharing because we can't be watching press conferences while we're podcasting. Maybe something to that. I'm sure maybe not.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll play. I mean, well, I'm not sure he'll play. I imagine if he plays, it will be painful. Like, I don't know if anybody's ever had an oblique injury, but they don't go away in 17 days. Not even when you're a 22-year-old young man with the best medical treatment that you can possibly get. They just don't. It's a very difficult thing. And it's recurring. And especially in basketball, when you're jumping and stretching your arms out, and it's just not good. So he will be in pain if he does go, you know. So I think he'll, you know, I'm sure he's going to try, though. I can't imagine he doesn't want to. They've been really, really darn good when he's played. He's a sensational point guard. So we will see how it goes. But that's Florida's sub-bracket. We're going to get out of here and Patreon it up. But I'll let Eric sign us off. As Florida runner-up at the SEC tournament and 7 seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I'm going to quickly throw out, and I don't know if this is okay, Neil, but if you are a Patreon subscriber and you have a question you want us to talk about, whether it be Florida related or somewhere else in the bracket, send it in to the show account or on Patreon. I don't know the best, and we'll talk about it. I know this is only for people that are listening live. Sorry if you're listening to this afterwards. Hey, maybe you can still send in a question and we'll answer it, you know, as we podcast after we know who Florida's playing.
Totally.
But definitely, if you're listening to this live, we are going to throw it onto Patreon, or we're going to end this recording, jump on a Patreon one. So if you have a question you want answered about anything, send it in, and we'll almost certainly get to it. And if you're not subscribed to our Patreon, this is the month to do it. Hey, we waited a long time for Florida to have some buzz going into a NCAA tournament bracket. So why not make the most of it? But thank you so much for tuning in. Go Gators and keep attacking closeouts.